Cavalier fans, and welcome into this post-loss edition of the Fear the Fro podcast. I'm not going to belabor this. We're going to get right into it because you're going to get two Fear the Fro episodes in short succession. This one will be the post-mortem, where I look at what happened with this Cavaliers-Suns game. We talk about some of the things that have developed as the Cavaliers have fallen in three of the last four games. Very injury-ravaged Cavalier team. One without not just the headliner stars, but the man of the hour last week, Drippy Dean Wade, has been out of the lineup, and certainly tonight a night when we could have used him. Tonight a night when we're facing three particularly effective scorers, all who had very good nights, very efficient evenings, piling up 88 collective points between three men on the Phoenix Suns. And that would normally make you think they blew the doors off the Cavaliers, but they did not. We were in it till the very end. A fourth quarter, which we should be proud of, minus a couple of unfortunate execution failures. But from a heart perspective, from a physicality perspective, so much to like about that fourth quarter. First, let's address the elephant in the room. JB was asked about it in the post game. I'll use him to set it up. You know the play I'm talking about, the unfortunate alley-oop attempt.
That's a tough play. We've seen Jared Allen make that play, 400 times in a row. So that was just a tough play, and it never comes down to just that play. We've got to do a better job, and again, I've got to do a better job at helping our guys. We just got to score more than 41 points and a half. So give them credit. Their defense was sound. They did a great job. But that's on me to help our guys, find easier ways to score.
I want to say this about the alley-oop play. I saw people in the postgame attacking Darius Garland. Now, I will put all of Jared Allen inside of me at any moment.
Swallowed up. Have you ever been swallowed up? Have you gone through a time of swallowing where everything was swallowed?
But even I, fervent defender of the Fro, would say that there's blame to go around on that, and there's credit to be doled out to Darius Garland, because before you focus on the fact that the pass wasn't clean, it wasn't caught cleanly, it was thrown with probably a little too much mustard on it, don't forget how the play developed. Darius Garland was isolated on Grayson Allen, and not only did he get by him, but he managed to create an opportunity when all five guys on the Suns, go back and rewatch the play, everybody is looking at Darius Garland. The entire half, they're trapping, throwing doubles at him, making his job impossible. And despite that, in a moment where the Cavaliers had the opportunity to tie up the game, he still succeeded in getting what he wanted. Booker is playing way off Craig Porter Jr. Eubanks abandons Jared Allen altogether, and Darius has four guys shaded to his side of the floor. And he gets a pass off to Jared Allen. It didn't get caught cleanly. It didn't get thrown to the perfect place. But if you're fixated on that, an opportunity we didn't convert, where at least we got a shot off, then I think you're focusing on the wrong thing. Because the thing that I took away from tonight is you can't have empty trips where you don't even get a shot attempt off. Twice in the fourth quarter, Nyang caught one out of bounds. Okoro caught one out of bounds. Those are wasted trips. Not to mention Craig threw a turnover when he dribbled too far under the hoop and didn't have a lane to get it out to anyone. This loss wasn't on any one person. And secondly, I don't even think we should feel ashamed. I am fully with everyone who is disappointed that the Suns figured out a way to essentially scheme Darius back into reality after he was destroying them in the first quarter. But I would also ask for you to be realistic. Darius being effectively slowed after that first quarter is as much of an indictment of the guys on the roster and on the floor around him as it is of Darius. There's only so much you can ask him to do if Sam Merrill has gone stone fucking cold. In these last five games, Sam Merrill is now 6-35. That is a dubious historical accomplishment. Do you know who this season has taken 35 three-point attempts in a five-game span and shot worse? It is a small list. It is but three men. The first one is obvious. It's Jordan Poole, of course, who at the end of January had a five-game stretch where he went 6-36. The second is Miles Bridges. He owns the single worst high-volume shooting slump this season as he went 6-for-37 in 5 games. And the third man, believe it or not, is an all-NBA-level talent who is concurrently sucking shit right alongside Sam Merrill. Tyrese Haliburton is in the midst of a 5-game stretch that, as of the end of yesterday evening, here is currently 6-for-35 in his last 5 games. He's destroying fantasy basketball owner dreams all over the place right now. But the difference is, Sam is here for one thing: make three-pointers. So when that abandons you, especially in a time where we're overall very short-handed, it's not doing Darius any favors. It's not doing anyone any favors. I hope he can snap out of that streak the same way that George Nyang mostly has snapped out of his slump. But the point is, it was very apparent that the Suns were not going to let Darius Garland be their undoing. And they dared the Cavaliers to make three-pointers in the second half. And whereas we were okay in the first half, we were 10 for 23 in the first half. We only made 5 of 23 in the second half. So we cut our efficiency in half. And the fourth quarter was especially bad. Just 1 triple in 7 attempts. You could see on that alley-oop play that didn't work, Booker was way the fuck off of Craig Porter Jr., who's been very good in 3 of the last 4 games. Knocked down multiple triples against the Nets, but not in a high-leverage situation. We were down by 20 in that fourth quarter. So as much as I've loved what we've seen from Craig Porter Jr. in these last 4 games in terms of not having hesitation, shooting, and converting at a reasonable clip, in the end, I don't think that that really manifested tonight, because they were perfectly okay with abandoning him to make sure that Darius didn't make them pay. And Isaac Okoro, I will say this, he was very good tonight, but I thought he looked off open three-pointers at least twice in the fourth quarter from that right elbow to right corner area, where I thought he should have pulled up with no hesitation, and instead he swung it back towards Darius or towards the, you know, above the break look. For a guy who's played so confidently and so aggressively and was pivotal in the early part of this game, I thought he showed a bad time to go away from that confidence late in the game. And there was a big rebound that he prevented Devin Booker from corralling in that fourth quarter, an offensive rebound that otherwise would have been Devin's, but Okoro knocked it out of his hand. He made some big plays, but there were a couple noticeable hesitations on three-point looks that I just wanted him to take. Now, something else I wanted to point out about the fourth quarter, I thought it was pretty great that this felt like 3 games in one. It felt like the Cavaliers came out in the first quarter and they knew the importance of pace. They pushed the ball. They got buckets before the Suns were able to get back, before they were able to get set, before they were able to do things like throw traps at Darius Garland. And he had his way with them in that unbelievable first quarter. But as the game wore on, the pace slowed, the physicality ramped up. I thought Nurkic started imposing his will more and more. And while he didn't have some insanely loud stat line, I realized he didn't even have a double-double. He didn't crack 10 points. He finished with a few offensive rebounds, terrible at the free throw line. But when he went out of the game in the fourth quarter, you saw the difference. The Cavaliers went from getting dominated on the glass. I mean, the Suns had 12 offensive rebounds, 4 for Devin Booker alone. And a lot of those came because so many bodies had to occupy Yusuf Nurkic that other guys seized on those opportunities. But when Jared Allen found a rhythm in the early part of the fourth quarter and the Cavaliers closed that 9-point lead to a tie game, the Suns went away from Nurkic. The Cavs got the Suns back on their heels in the fourth quarter, which felt like an accomplishment in and of itself after that third quarter where we just got pummeled. So for them to respond and not put him in the rest of the game, it created a lot of second-chance opportunities. Craig Porter Jr., Jared Allen, Caris LeVert, they all got to the glass with much more ease in the second half of that fourth quarter. If not for leaving so many missed shots out there and a couple of empty possessions, then the Cavaliers could have won that game. So I guess I'm not going away feeling devastated here. I'm pissed the manner in which we lost to the Hawks and the Nets, but we could have easily lost that Minnesota game. And just indulge me for a second. I want to talk about that game. I fought 21 free throws for Jared Allen to score 33 points and 18 rebounds. Jesus, was that game incredible. And to see him go to the free throw line 21 times, I finally got an idea of what it would be like to root for Joel Embiid. Jared Allen has never had a 20 free throw game. That's 5 more free throws than his previous career high, which came over 5 years ago. On the season, we're talking about a man who at that point was shooting 3.5 free throws. Now, that 21 free throw performance pushed him up over 4, but this is not a guy who typically gets whistles like that. I do feel sympathy with the Wolves fans, not because I didn't think that Jared Allen was getting fouled, but because I have never seen the refs actually give him those fouls. And for so many of the 50-50 calls to go the Cavaliers' way late in the game, they have a right to feel hosed, but Rudy Gobert specifically is a fucking idiot. That sixth foul was painfully obvious, and to choose to do that after that sixth foul, in a game where that one free throw was essentially the difference between a victory and sending it to overtime, what a boneheaded move. And then the double down, and not just to complain about the free throw disparity or that your matchup went to the line 20 times, all very valid complaints, he instead decided to pitch out this conspiracy theory about Scott Foster and gambling, which elicited a $100,000 fine. Now, keep in mind, this rant by the Toronto Raptors coach, in which he made this insane Scotty Barnes statement. You remember this one?
Scotty Barnes is going to be all-star. He's going to be the face of this league.
That only got a $50,000 fine. They doubled it up with Rudy Gobert, I think in part because he's a player. It's one thing, people assume coaches are going to bitch about officiating. But this quote from him, this is lunacy. "I made some mistakes. I airballed a dunk. Referees make mistakes too. But sometimes I think it's more than mistakes. I think everyone that's in this league knows. I think it's got to get better. I know the betting and all that is becoming bigger and bigger, but it shouldn't feel that way." What the fuck does that have to do with anything that happened in that game? I'm really trying to put myself in their shoes. I know I'd be pissed. I feel like we have been in their shoes plenty, on the wrong end of a free throw disparity. Some introspection would be nice. An acknowledgement, perhaps, that Ant Edwards decided to scream in Jared Allen's face after a made dunk. One of the nicest guys in the NBA. But he decided that he needed to unload on him and he got a tech. Or do the refs have anything to do with the fact that your starting backcourt shot 0 for 12 from outside the arc? Or that everybody not named Naz Reid was a combined 1 for 19? Or that your own coach decided to go away from the only fucking guy who could make an outside shot? They went away from Naz Reid late, despite him having an absolutely unstoppable performance. None of those things have anything to do with the officials. So I, for one, am glad that Rudy is being punished for his stupidity and the I have a lot more sympathy in the game for being reactionary. Even the technical, while incredibly stupid, it was in the moment. He had time in the locker room, though, to cool down, to really step back and look at what transpired. And that's what he came back with. He deserves every cent of that fine. I know nobody likes to take blame for their own actions. But there's already enough conspiracy theories after the Donaghy thing that we've got to squash with a fucking iron hammer, with a Dean Dick-sized gavel. Anybody who suggests the integrity of the NBA is in doubt after what was just a painfully stupid sixth foul. There's a time and place for suggesting conspiracy theories, but if I piss all over the floor of my bathroom and then I tell my wife that it was the fucking Illuminati, then she will righteously tell me to shut the fuck up. Now I want to pivot towards the audio mailbag because some messages have been accumulating over the weekend, specifically from one of my, well, he might be my favorite audio mailbag participant right now.
Please leave a message.
And now a message recorded and submitted to me at CavsPod.com.
Bob, it's your boy Jeff in Bama again.
Jeff in Alabama, what do you got?
Thinking back to better times, back to the Dean's penis game.
Jeff, I fucking love you, man. The fact that you referred to it as the Dean's penis game, that is what I hope my legacy is years from now. I don't want people to call this Dean Wade's career high. I want them to say I was there the night that the Boston Celtics experienced Dean's penis. That is what I hope. But anyway, back to your call.
The Dean's penis game. I wanted to share a point that I totally forgot about. My favorite part of the whole fucking game when we came back and sacrificed the Celtics was at one point when we were down huge, they cut to the bench. And you'd expect to see everybody sulking and down in the dumps, but they fucking wasn't, man. They panned everybody, and everybody's still engaged completely in the game. And I knew right then, we're coming for these motherfuckers. But that's just talking about the resiliency of our team. As soon as we get Dean back in the lineup, the league better watch the fuck out, because Dean Wade's the shit, man.
Dean Wade is the shit, man.
Dean Wade's the shit, man.
And Jeff, you keep providing me sound bites like that and like this.
Dude, that shit sucked.
And you will die a legend. It's still a week later and I'm still riding high from that. I feel like what we're experiencing now with him out of the lineup, I feel a little bit responsible. I said on the Dean's Penis pod, just that one game was worth the entirety of his $6 million contract. And if he never played a whole game the rest of the season, that it was worth it. And what happens? Dean's out for personal reasons. What the fuck does that mean? Now, I have a theory. A fourth quarter like that, where Dean's dick was just swanging, that's the type of thing that just destroys a jockstrap. I'm sure he probably needs to replace it. It's not something you can just buy off the rack at a Dick's Sporting Goods. These things have to be specially made for a man of his girth and substance. So perhaps he has to miss a few games while we wait. But eventually, his dong will be contained, he'll get back out there on the court, and the winning will recommence. Now, I want to wrap up this podcast with a genuine thank you to all of you who listen to the Fear the Fro podcast. I know I shamelessly pandered for 5-star reviews and ratings before last episode, the Dean's Penis episode, and you showed up. You took us from just under 100 reviews to well over 100 reviews. And while it is a completely arbitrary and meaningless fluffing up my ego accomplishment, I did say on a previous pod, when I crossed that arbitrary threshold, I wanted to do some sort of thank you giveaway or prize. So my initial thought is just be listening to the next several podcasts, because I'm going to put it within the pod itself as a way to make sure that whoever wins is actually a listener. And then as I cross subsequent thresholds, hopefully I'll just keep doing it. It'll keep getting bigger and bigger, and we'll get back to our winning ways, because that's the other teaser. I got a new song, a collaboration with another musician, an expat Cavalier fan living in Turkey, who let me hop on his track, and it was a lot of fun. But I would like to expose it to more ears rather than less, so I'm going to sit on it till we win. That is for the future of the Fear the Fro podcast, though. Let's get back to our winning way, shall we? See you tomorrow or Wednesday morning. In the meantime, keep swallowing.
Swallowed up. Have you ever been swallowed up? Have you gone through a time of swallowing where everything was swallowed?
Okay, that's enough.
Stop it!
This has been another Fear the Fro.
It's over.
Podcast.
That was pathetic.
If you enjoyed what you heard today,
put it on the highlight reel.
Please consider subscribing. Check out FroPod.com for more Cavaliers and NBA coverage.
That's what's on display here.